When I'm telling a story, I like to describe the setting. Where, when, who. But in this case, I have a problem, because I can't be certain about any of that. The when could be in the 80s of the first century. The where might be somewhere in the region of Antioch in modern Turkey. The who might, for all I know, be a man called Luke. As for more about the sort of where, in a very small house of clay bricks, or in a posher, larger, more spacious area house belonging to a wealthy Christian convert, your guess is as good as mine. Another question is how, just how physically. I'm thinking that Luke must have some flat surfaces on which to lay his papers and do his writing. I think he must have a copy of the Gospel of Mark in front of him, and probably a collection of other sayings of Jesus, or even, in fact, the Gospel of Matthew itself. Who knows? He's got a lot of extra material that he himself has sourced, heard about, or heard tell of. Enough to write his account of the ministry, the life and death and resurrection of Jesus of Nazareth. Where, when, who, how? These all have only approximate and provisional answers. But Luke tells us himself the answer to the why. He says right at the beginning, "I want you to know the truth." And I take it you could be either Christians in general or his particular dedicatee. That's the word. It's the truth about the things you have been instructed in. So you know about Jesus, about the gospel, and I, Luke, I'm writing so that you can be more sure what happened, what truly happened, and what it truly means. In my story, I'm imagining that Luke has someone or someones to help him, what we might call a PA or a research assistant or an intern. I'm imagining a Gaius or a Daniel helping him get things in order, check the reports, see how he's fitting Mark's account in and putting in all the extra material, changing some of the order, trying to keep track of papyrus sheets and papyrus scrolls that mount up and fall on the floor. So today, Gaius picks up a piece of papyrus. He reads through a section Luke has just written in fair copy. He says, "So you haven't really changed anything from Mark's account of the swine episode?" "No," says Luke, "I couldn't really improve on Mark's account. I just put the description of the man living among tombs a bit further down. Those who know their scriptures will realize the connection to a passage of Isaiah which speaks of a rebellious people sitting inside tombs and eating swine's flesh. Those people kept to themselves because they felt too holy, too intrigued by esoteric religion to mix with ordinary people. That poor soul that Jesus met was keeping to himself because of his demons. What happened shows Jesus meeting people where they are, whatever life has thrown at them, whatever their mental health. You don't have to be well balanced and coping for Jesus to notice you." "I'm still catching up with the Hebrew scriptures," says Gaius. "I must go back to late Isaiah. But something worries me in the account you followed about what happened in the country of the Gadarenes. It's that word, legion. Jesus asks, 'What is your name?' And the man says, 'Legion.' And then you, Luke, you say that's because many demons had entered him. That's kind of clearer than what Mark wrote. Mark says, the man says, 'Legion, for we are many.' Mark is stranger and more arresting. You are clearer, but a bit more prosaic." "But Luke," Gaius goes on, "is that true? Did the man say legion? It's a Latin word, and you followed Mark by transliterating it into Greek. But that man would have been speaking Aramaic. Wouldn't he just have said the Aramaic word for multiple if he was talking about a schizoid personality disorder? The thing is, the word legion sends all kinds of messages. And you set the event in Gerasa, because Mark does, but I wonder if it actually happened in Gadara, which is nearer the Sea of Galilee. I suspect Mark moved it to Gerasa, which is nearby, and I suspect Mark did that because Gerasa is associated with that revolt 20 years back and the way Rome suppressed it. Gaius says, I mean, writing in this way makes it very political, doesn't it? Do you really want to mix up a story that shows the power of Jesus over evil spirits and his compassion for those who suffer mentally, for those who are outcast? Do you really want to mix up that story with a coded political message? Because you also, by using these words, seem to be saying that the power of Rome is not ultimate. Jesus is greater than Rome. Any church across the Mediterranean will get that message. And I've been reading more of Matthew's Gospel. There's a place where Jesus says to the Pharisees, on the day of judgment, you will have to give an account for every careless word you utter. And Luke, you say right at the start of this Gospel that you're writing so that people will know the truth. Do you really think that word legion is true? That Gerasa is true? Are they both careless words? Luke smiles at Gaius' outburst. The lad has his heart in the right place. Any disciple of Jesus must be committed to truth above all else. Well, and love. But love is paramount because that's the truth. He says, let me think about it, son. I'll sleep on it and come back to you. He does go to bed thinking about it. And as he sleeps, remember, this is just my story, Luke seems to have a dream or a vision. He thinks he's about a couple of thousand years into the future. He's almost the other side of the world, and he knows he's in a great country. Like most places in the world, this country has been home to many peoples. The present inhabitants, the ones who dominate, have come in over the last four centuries. Many of those who came first were coming because they wanted freedom to follow Christ. Many others have come in from all over the world, especially the countries of Europe. Like any country, it hasn't been perfect. It has abused power. It has interfered with other nations, sometimes too much, sometimes too little. It has allowed a huge gap between rich and poor. It has believed so much in freedom and self-reliance that people haven't looked after each other as they might have done. But it has also been a great country. It has been generous, it has given help, it has promoted learning, it has used its wealth to benefit some of the world's poorest people. It has been a safe haven for persecuted people. But in the dream, Luke sees some people getting together and wearing silly hats and chanting and expressing that they want to make their country great again. And by great, they mean selfish and inward-looking, unkind to poor people, unkind to persecuted people, not allowing certain words, but only the words that are approved. So that the people like Luke himself, the writers and speakers and communicators, they are frightened. If they tell the truth, will soldiers come knocking at the door? Now, it seems that writers, up until recently, have been using really an advanced form of papyrus. But in recent years, that's given way to something different. People access information by looking at tiny lighted rectangles in holders made of something they call plastic. Luke is incredulous about this. The old-style papyrus-type publications do still exist. One has published a list of words no longer allowed, or words which employers are discouraged from using. Words like clean energy, climate science, sense of belonging, trauma, female. The new people in power are critical of the scribes and scholars who they say have been obsessed with using the right language. But they clearly accept the fundamental point that how you talk about things affects how you think about them. Is that why Jesus asked us to account for our careless words? Luke sees that the new people who want to be what they call great are making the word great mean what they want it to mean. And if you say, oh no, it doesn't mean that, they will say they are right and you are wrong. The scariest thing of all, the thing that makes Luke wake up screaming, is that a lot of the chanting, hat-wearing people who have enabled this to happen say that they follow Jesus. What kind of Jesus is this? It was a nightmare, says Luke to himself. Thank God it's not real. In the morning, he meets Gaius in their workroom. He is pale, but clear and firm. Look, Gaius, he says, I had a dream, and this is where it's left me. I will keep Mark's word legion. Remember, although that man in the tombs lived apart from people at that point, he had grown up in their world. He knew what a legion was, a division of the Roman army. I don't speak Aramaic myself, but it's not impossible, is it, that Aramaic speakers at the time were using that Latin word legion as slang for a lot, especially for a lot of oppressive forces. Mark's account is the nearest I can get to the actual event, and I don't feel I have good reason to change his words in this case. Also, Gaius, I'm not ashamed of the message that the gospel of Christ has political implications. I don't mean that it backs one person's party against the party of another person who has a different emphasis. But the gospel of Christ brings us hope because it's true, not because it suits us or it's wishful thinking. It gives us no license to make words mean what we want them to mean. So Christians will always be challenging political leaders, political systems, political ideas. Rome does some good things, but it's totalitarian and brutal. So Christians will always stand against that. I hope Christians will read my gospel and be strengthened to hold leaders to account. I hope they will hear clearly from me the truth that Jesus went out to the people outside, to the poor people, the mentally ill people, the addicted people, the people with no safe place to go, the frightened people. That man in the tombs is paradigmatic. He was poor, ill, unsafe, isolated. He contributed nothing to society. And he knew it. And although part of him was afraid, he knew that Jesus was bringing healing and goodness. Jesus acted the fact that he mattered, gave him hope, enabled him to be okay in his own skin in the world. We are always tempted to distort facts and change the meaning of words to suit ourselves. We object to truth to buffer ourselves against knowing our own inadequacy, to justify not sharing with others what we've been given. We will call kindness foolishness. We will call generosity unnatural. We will call goodness stupidity. We'll find all sorts of ways to use words to keep hold of our arrogance and our greed. But if people read my gospel, If they really listen to my gospel, they will be troubled about that. And it's not as though Christian congregations won't think about these things. When people read the Hebrew scriptures, when they read about Jesus, of course they will engage their brains before they start. They will consider what words mean and why they were used. They will care most of all about the truth. I'm writing this gospel so that people will know the truth of how God came to the world in Jesus. I'm writing so that people who follow Jesus can't so easily get it wrong. They will know truly the values Jesus gave us: love of God, love of people, and always love of truth. People who read my gospel and think about it will be kind and loving with their words. But Gaius, the morning is running away with us. We must crack on with the work. Amen.